Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Aspen police are looking for an unidentified suspect who ran into an art gallery and slashed a $3 million painting. In Silt, many residents are breathing a sigh of relief that the town has replaced its sculpture in the roundabout.
People are saying, what do blue herons have to do with Silt, Colorado?
And nationally, the ski industry saw an increase in skier visits this past season, but there is still room for growth.
Maybe the big guys have a responsibility because they operate so much on public land to make it a little more democratic.
A luxury condominium complex in downtown Aspen has hooked back into the city's stormwater system after it fixed its septic tank leak. Employers in Glenwood Springs are trying to stay ahead of the delays expected when the Grand Avenue Bridge closes in August. Finally, a reporter explains how he was threatened by law enforcement for informing the public about a drug case.
They found this really, really nasty stuff called carfentanil mixed with heroin in the scene of these Blue Lake deaths at the scene. Is there a batch of this around? Should heroin addicts in the valley know about this?
But first, we talk about an art crime that has the makings of a novel. Thank you for coming into the studio. Jason Auslander, he is a reporter for the Aspen Times, and Madeline Osberger, she's the contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News. And I've got Carla Jean Whitley on via Skype at the Glenwood Post Independent. She's the features writer and second in command there. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to be here.
Always glad to do it.
Jason, you're usually covering the cops in courts in Pitkin County, but you got a little bit of the taste of the arts coverage.
Well,
in the last
combined with
weeks.
The crime.
Yes. You know. So why don't you fill us in on this bizarre story?
Right. So I guess a week ago Tuesday, a man, although a lot of people have suggested, viewed the video and suggested that it was a woman.
It looks pretty slender person.
But a guy, as far as we know, because he had a full beard, sunglasses, a hat, dark clothing on, walks into the opera gallery on the mountainside of Dean Street, just down from the gondola. Walked right up to this painting that's on there on consignment for $2.95 million and whipped out a knife or a razor blade and went slashed it twice and then got
ran
out and booked out of there.
Then they even realized that he had done it or she had done it?
There was a woman in there, and she was obviously very freaked out once she did realize that what had happened. The guy's got a weapon in her. She was alone in there. This is a gallery that's full of, you know, Chagalls, Picassos. It was clear, not the only $3 million painting in there, and certainly not the most expensive painting in there. And this guy is not, I mean, he's a well-known artist, but he's not like Picasso well-known. His name's Christopher Wool. So
where is he from?
He's from New York. Originally from the Chicago area, but he lives in New York and Marfa, Texas.
Does he have any sort of Aspen connection at all, besides that having work hung here?
No.
Okay.
No, and it was the only painting by him in the gallery. Somebody had been calling about it for a few weeks beforehand, had called like three times the gallery owner, and so he had actually said to his assistant, hey, this guy may be coming in today. Keep
yeah,
your eyes open.
Sure was.
Right? Call me if he does, because, you know, it's a $3 million sale. The guy wants to be there. So, you know, logic would tell you that somebody's got this. This person has some connection to this painting, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Logically. And so cops will always jump to insurance scam, and that may well be what we're dealing with here. They're being very, very tight-lipped. They say they have some leads at this point. They've tracked from video, from businesses, that the guy ran down Cooper, past City Market, and into the residential area in the East End.
Right.
And may have had a car there. They're trying to keep information around that was around at that point, meaning like cell phone tower stuff and airplane flights, car rentals, things like that. But, you know, that was not going to tell them anything until they can identify this person.
I'm sure they're tracking the origin of the phone call of whoever's inquiring.
It was blocked.
Oh.
It was blocked. So the guy doesn't know. And the guy refused to give his name, which is why the guy was the owner of the art gallery. Was like, this is weird, you know.
Yeah.
And I actually thought that story was going to be a lot bigger kind of nationally. You know, I was expecting the New York Times to call me and It didn't make the New York Times.
Carla Jean, you guys picked it up, right?
I believe so, yeah. And, you know, in the past several years, novels about art crime have become quite a thing. So, I don't know, Jason, maybe that's how this should go.
Yeah, copycat. Yeah, it sounds,
copycat crime.
Sounds like a good beginning to an art novel.
Carla Jean, on the Arts Beat, you do a lot of coverage for the Global Post Independent, and you have covered from Silt all the way to Carbondale, and there's some, a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about a controversy with a sculpture going into the roundabout at Snowmass, and it sounds like the town of Silt's got that same issue.
Well, it's been entertaining to watch this unfold as a newcomer. But our Western Garfield County reporter, Alex Zorn, wrote a story about the new sculpture there in the roundabout, which is of several blue herons. Now, it's funny to me to watch this because on the one hand, people are saying, what do blue herons have to do with Silt, Colorado? And then other people are saying, oh, thank goodness, because the statue that it replaced included a rock climber whose behind was visible. Now, I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, where the most visible piece of art in the entire city includes a bare bottom. So I just thought this was kind of entertaining. Mm-hmm. But actually, the blue heron is an indigenous species to Silt. So there is an argument for either piece of art. Obviously, we've got plenty of rock climbers around here.
It was fully a naked rock climber? Or?
Well, it was like the buttocks.
But yes, because the rock climber like is facing the wall.
Yeah.
How long
you
was
know,
that?
Like the
how long was
tone
that there?
Ad.
Oh, it was installed in 2009, so it had been there, and people had been irked about it for years. Hmm. Other people complained about the old statue because they said it caused visibility issues in the roundabout, whereas the blue herons allow for a lot more open space and therefore better visibility.
But what was the impetus for them to replace it in the first place?
Well, Silt has been rebranding since 2015. The town changed its logo to one with the heron after a lot of public input and discussion. And so this is an extension of that rebranding.
What's this branding? How are they branding it? Do you know?
Well, they've got their town logo, and I know that's part of it. But, you know, similarly, we've seen the town of Rifle working on a rebranding campaign as well. You know, I've seen cities do this sort of thing in the past, partly to attract tourism, but then in Birmingham, Alabama, where I'm from, part of it was also to attract more business from the people who already lived there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, those communities are they're developing in their own right, you know, mm-hmm. So now there's professional families that are living there who are, you know, commuting from either up to through the Roaring Fork Valley or through the canyon into the Gypsum Eagle area. You also did a story, Carla Jean, about the First Fridays. Yeah, what was your coverage?
So this First Friday was especially interesting because it was a confluence of a lot of events. Festival Las Americas, which has traditionally been held at the end of the summer, moved to the beginning of summer. Friday was Cinco de Mayo, so that was a nice tie-in there. And in addition to that, Carbondale had its family block party, and then, of course, the usual First Friday events. So it was a really neat time to get down there and see not only how many people were out and about. My first Friday was in January. It was pretty quiet. It was very cold. So not only seeing all the people on the streets and seeing the art, but also seeing the mixture of cultures. And that was one of the things that the organizers of Festival Las Americas said they were really out to achieve. That event is a fundraiser for a scholarship program that Club Rotario administers each year. But it was a neat mix of Latino culture, Anglo culture, and also just good food and fun.
Does Carbondale, they have sculptures in their roundabout, don't they?
Yeah, the James Searles one. And never had any controversy.
Well,
I mean,
the source. I mean, James Searles,
right?
Very well known in this area, respected.
Well, and Carbondale's unveiling of the new public art sculptures is next month. So I will be back out there for lots more fun.
Madeline, did you see the article even that was in the Aspen Times on Thursday morning related to the intro West sale?
And yeah, it was kind of a continuation of the Denver Post story that Jason had written about IntraWest's
Jason Blevins, yes.
Jason Blevins.
So there's been some news just in the ski industry in general. Mm-hmm. You are the resident expert reporter on the ski industry in this room.
Okay, in this room. Next to you, Carolyn.
But why don't you give us an analysis of what the headlines have been?
Skier visits increased a slight amount last year. We had this discussion before. We're still not up to the peak of 60 million. I mean, there were 54.7 million skier visits approximately this year, National Ski Areas Association. The one good thing was that there were more ski areas operating, 479 ski areas operating this year, 464 last year, which I think is a good growth trend. Now, obviously, the table has been reset with the big guys coming in and buying all these. I've been thinking about this for about the last 2 weeks, and I think it's the time for the ski industry to really take this opportunity to try to grow that market again, that to get up to that, and to maybe in some ways
to get to 60 million.
To get to 60 million, to our high point. More people skiing, maybe prices, they can get a little more competitive in these small areas. I just hate to see them have to take the big deep dive in prices. But how else can we expand this area? Maybe the big guys have a responsibility because they operate so much on public land to make it a little more democratic, to get more people into this. I mean, really, there's so much opportunity right now to make this the sport of the future. Kind of like golf had that giant resurgence in the 80s and early 90s. And I'd love to see the ski industry hop on this as well.
Right. And then the Aspen Times article was suggesting that the ski company wasn't just a done deal when it was going to buy IntraWest. They wanted to buy just bits and pieces of that.
Right. They just wanted to buy Winter Park, Steamboat, and CMH, Canadian Mountain Holidays. But, you know, apparently IntraWest said, no, we want you to take the West Virginia and the other.
What do you think about that?
Well,
you think it's
possibly they'll have to spin off those areas eventually, or, you know, it's so new that I'm sure they're still working on their business plan for that, how to deal with that. Does it make sense for SkiCo to own areas in eastern Canada? I don't know.
Right. Maybe they just sell those off.
Maybe they sell those off. Yeah.
I mean, look at Steamboat. There was a headline that said it profited, what, $177 million?
Yes, in the third quarter. No, in the third quarter. And that's
that's big business.
That's when the ski areas make the most money, though, because that's when, you know, the height of the ski season, and then they've got, you know, lessons and food and all that, and that's when they're cranking their profits.
That was Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News, Aspen Times reporter Jason Auslander in the studio, and Carla Jean Whitley, features editor at the Glenwood Post Independent, speaking via Skype. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and you are listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. We now continue our conversation. Madeline, you did a ski piece. I appreciated this. Just, I like the ski history of this valley, and there's an event coming up.
This gentleman, he was supposed to set out this morning from Leadville to Army Reserve. I don't think he really wanted me to use his name, but we had already talked at length, so I don't know if that's hopefully going to endanger his position, but it's just, he's skiing over the pass. It'll take probably 4 days. It's retracing the route of the 10th Mountain Division, guys from 1944. Mm-hmm. Just so exciting.
It's pretty cool. How old is he?
30.
Okay.
So nice and fit. And this is his third year he's done it. So, and they had some interesting weather last year and the year before as well. So this time of year, you just don't know.
Right.
The slabs up there. I thought it was interesting. He was recounting last year and he said, you know, basically Aspen was in sight, and then you've got this 2 mile slog up the Hunter Creek Valley through the woods, and it's like, ugh.
That's where it seems like it's becomes a slog.
The slog, that's right. You know? So hopefully he can raise some money for the Green Beret. Go to aspendailynews.com to get the link on that story.
Great. Jason, you have been on a story for it's been over a year, and it just seems to have come to resolution this week when the residents of Little Nell had a problem with their septic tank, apparently, or system.
Right.
And they were dumping basically raw sewage city storm drains.
And contaminating the city with E. coli.
Right. And so when you first reported on this story last year, the city kind of gave you the runaround, like, it's not our problem. Okay, yes, it is our problem, right?
Yeah, the city didn't seem to... Well, so we know somebody, you and I, that works at the ski shop there on Dean Street that went so far as to cover up the storm grates that were just blowing this, literally this, like, just, it's like sewage air into their shop. You know, it was that far. He had tried to complain to the city. The people that were working in that coffee shop over there, the Starbucks, were, or no, it was the rental shop there next to it, were complaining of, you know, some illness type things. And because that was the only one that was still uncovered, was right in front of their building. And so, yeah, the city, I don't, you know, they got mad at me because they felt that I didn't give them a chance to speak. But basically, they weren't really responding to these people's complaints. And at first, when I first, the only reason I wrote the story was because I would wait for the Hunter Creek bus across from the Wheeler Opera House every day. And it just, it was really strong and gross. And I thought it was coming out of that fountain right there. The kids like to play in, you know. So I started asking around, and then a coworker whose husband works up at that ski shop said, oh, you should go up there. So I went up there, wrote the story. And before I had talked to a lot of those people, I had talked with the public works, the head of the public works for the city, and he had walked over to the fountain with me and said, and the odor wasn't super strong, but we could both kind of smell it, but he was more interested in making sure there wasn't a natural gas leak. That was, and he didn't smell, we didn't smell any of that. He went back to his office, and I said, well, listen, I'm going to call you back, because, and he didn't tell me that he was going to be out that afternoon. So I wrote the story, he never called me back, and, you know, it's a good example of, you know, what newspapers and journalism is all about in terms of, you know, when people aren't being listened to, it's a good, you know, the Fourth Estate can step in. And so basically in that original story, they said, well, we think it's organic matter that's washed into the storm drains and is decaying. Okay, you know, what do I know? So then the city started testing and they found all this coliform, fecal coliform and E. coli spread literally all over the storm drains, all over the wetlands at Rio Grande Park, heading into the, and you know, all that stuff into the river too. So this whole process is, I mean, that was in March of 2016. And I think they identified the E. coli a couple weeks after that and made them stop doing it.
So residents a little now being hooked into the stormwater system.
Right. And I spoke with their GM and she was just kind of, you could tell, a little exasperated because she was like, this is a 7-year-old building. This should not be happening here. And it had something to do with a sewage ejector pit or one of those sort of technical things. But they ended up spending a lot of money to fix it. They had to. And then they were still, according to April at the city, they were still detecting some E. coli in there, which apparently probably was there before the leak happened. It's just sort of naturally occurring or something, and it's not, it doesn't come from a sanitary type of a situation. Very low amounts, but still the state required them to get a permit, so that took another, you know, several months. And so now it's
just finally getting hooked back in.
Yeah.
Was the smell strongest in the spring during runoff?
Well, that was when I started noticing it, certainly. Yeah. You know, it was March of last year.
Because last year up in Snowmass, well, the last couple of years in Snowmass, the Viceroy, they had that similar problem with a funky smell. And I haven't detected it this year. Mm-hmm. And they did some mitigation or whatever. But do you remember that?
When I wrote the story, people around that area said, oh, every year it kind of smells like this. But it, you know, it didn't. I certainly have not smelled it this year. And I wait for that bus every day.
Yeah,
and it may be a case of organic matter kind of decaying in there on a normal basis, that kind of occasionally gives off that kind of sewagey smell, but this was obviously, you know, stronger.
Well, the city around the city, you get that inversion, and you do get that like rotten egg smell, and some of it's from just old sewage lines, but there's plenty of new development where new lines have gone in. So, like, I think it's just the whole network is susceptible.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I hear too, but again, nothing was like it was. I mean, and this prompted the city to get down there and actually like clean out the storm drains. They had to get high pressure sprayers and, you know, dogs needed to be shooed out of the wetlands down there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was relatively serious.
It was. was Aspen Times reporter Jason Auslander and Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, host of Valley Roundup. We now continue our conversation with Carla Jean Whitley, features editor at the Glenwood Post-Independent. Going back to you, Carla Jean, the Glenwood Post-Independent routinely keeps their readers up to date on what's going on with the bridge. There was a headline in Thursday's paper about employers trying to figure out ways to cut down on traffic for when this thing shuts down this summer. Any real revolutionary ideas there?
Well, there are several things that you would expect to see. People are being encouraged to take a bus, to ride a bike, anything they can do to keep cars off the road. But in addition to that, there are a couple of entities that have said that they are incentivizing their employees in one way or another. So some examples are the Garfield County government is shifting a lot of its workforce to Rifle during that 95-day detour period, which begins in August. And so that's to help cut down on the number of their people that are on the bridge. Valley View Hospital has a number of clinics and other offices throughout the county. And so that, too, is a way that they are trying to encourage people to reduce traffic on the bridge if you can make an appointment at one of those other facilities. Or if you're an employee who can work at one of those other facilities, they want you to be able to do that.
How's the whole thing going to work for those of us who haven't been paying very close attention?
Well, the bridge will be closed for 95 days starting August 14th. And they will reroute traffic onto Midland Avenue and then down 8th Street in that bridge there.
Is that the route sort of by the courthouse down there?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. So that is not able to hold the capacity that the current bridge deals with. And so it's really important to see a reduction in the number of cars traveling at peak hours in order to avoid or at least minimize the craziness as far as traffic goes. Already we're seeing plenty of bridge traffic down this way. But, you know, when the bridge isn't there, it's going to be a whole different story.
95 days is a long time.
It is a long time. That's just what it's scheduled.
That's just what it's scheduled to. You know, it could be more than that. You think about the scenarios of if you're trying to get to the desert, McClure is going to be your saving grace, right? So you can guarantee there's going to be traffic going through Redstone and over through Paonia, right? And then Cottonwood Pass is a good way to wrap around if you're trying to get to on the other side. Gypsum and Vail and over to Denver. Or, of course, Independence Pass. So there are ways to not have to go through Glenwood if you're not trying to get to, let's say, what, right?
Is it really going to be that necessary,
to Glenwood?
Though?
Yeah, it's going to be brutal.
Really? What are we talking about? Like an hour to get through just that section?
Carla, they were talking about an hour to get through Glenwood at one point.
Really?
Is that still the case?
I mean, it's certainly dependent on a lot of different factors, but that's definitely possible. I mean, we've seen a lot of readers comment and say, well, why are they doing this during the school year? Can't they work at night? Well, what time of day you work doesn't matter when there is physically not a bridge. So that's kind of part of the issue. But then also, you know, summer is the busy season for Glenwood tourism. And so that's
huge.
A factor in why you do this during the school year rather than during the summer. We need that income. But yeah, so it's going to be quite an experience. And yeah, traffic, it could be truly severe. The county has already launched its program to encourage more people to get out on their bikes and using the bus and such, so that people are accustomed to these things before the bridge closure in August.
And what's the date in August?
It's August 14th, I believe.
If you read the article, it seems like they're trying to be very proactive in figuring this out. I mean, I've heard stories about major construction companies flying their workers into the Pickens County Airport from Rifle to just get them up here.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize the delays were expected to be
that
long.
No, we need a big mindset change. Just to use example, when we were interviewing the Aspen City Council candidates to talk about endorsements, I asked each of them if they rode the bus. And some of them looked at me like, why would I ride the bus? That's for someone else mm-hmm. to do. Only two of the elected official, or the soon, hopefully, elected officials said, admitted to riding the bus. It's not just for the worker bees. It's for all of us.
Right.
And I think that that message has really got to be. I mean, you said you ride the bus, Jason. I ride the bus every day.
I ride the bus all the time. Mm-hmm. But that's interesting because I cover the commissioners, and those people ride the bus all the time. I mean, they're big supporters, Steve and George and, you know, Patty and Rachel. Big supporters.
Right. Well, that's awesome to hear. Well,
yeah, I mean, I know Steve rides it up and down the valley all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's such an efficient way to get up and down the valley. I like to maximize my work time, too, so you can work on the bus.
Right.
And for those of us who live in Aspen, we're fortunate it's free.
Right.
So that's a real incentive right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Jason, just as a cops and courts reporter, and Carla Jean will touch on this for a moment. I've expressed my frustration on last week's show about trying to get information from a certain nonprofit that's going through financial distress. And they
that's
won't
a good
give up,
term.
Yeah, they won't give up their financials. And under CORA, Colorado Open Records Request Act, I believe, they should. And so this is the same kind of example of reporters getting shut down.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the incident where the two men died in the Blue Lake House with the elephant tranquilizer.
Right. I ended up talking to the head of investigations at the Eagle County Sheriff's Office, who repeatedly threatened to bring me up on criminal charges. And I said, great.
For
Let's do that.
For what?
For interfering with an active investigation.
Because you were what?
Because I was leaked an email that said that they found this really, really nasty stuff called carfentanil mixed with heroin in the scene of these Blue Lake deaths at the scene. And they had known this for a week, and they weren't telling anybody. So, you know, is there a batch of this around? Should heroin addicts in the Valley know about this? They clearly didn't want to get that information out, because he literally told me not only to quote him as saying he was going to bring me up on criminal charges and come arrest me, but repeatedly threatened to do that. And he was, you know, pretty nice about his threatening. He wasn't yelling at me or anything. But
he said it was illegal for you to do that.
Yeah, and he said, I'm going to go to the district attorney. I'm going to get, he's like, if it's cool with you that I go to the district attorney and get an arrest warrant for you and come and arrest you, then go ahead and do it. And I said, great, yeah, awesome. That's what I'm going to do. He tried to make a deal with me saying, you know, just can you not do this, and I'll talk to you only when this gets out. And I was like, you know,
what's his name?
Dan Loya. And I said, no, I'm not going to make that deal. I don't know you, you know, and I think this information, I think it needs to be out there. So I put that in the story, and I did. And just to be fair, I got a note from Bruce Brown, the district attorney up there, the next day saying, hey, listen, thanks for your interest. you know, this isn't an active investigation, so obviously we can't give you all this information. That said, I think we can be a little bit more transparent than your article might portray. And then, that was in the morning, so then that afternoon, Eagle County Sheriff releases a press release thanking our media outlets, quote unquote, for disseminating the information about the carfentanil, which I thought was completely disingenuous and weird, but,
right.
You know.
Right.
So again, you know, it's just like fighting with these people to get
information to the public. With that, I will call it a show.
Thanks for letting me rant.
Thank you.
Carla Jean, thanks for joining us via Skype.
Glad to do it.
That was Aspen Times reporter Jason Auslander and Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News, speaking with me in the studio, along with Carla Jean Whitley, features editor for the Glenwood Post Independent, speaking with me via Skype. I'm Carolyn Sakariasin, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.